Hello, and welcome to Spartan Speak, a podcast from Atlantic State Journal and Detroit Free Press focused on Michigan State sports. I'm Phil Friend, your host and sports writer for LSJ. Joining me this week, as always, our LSJ sports columnist Graham Couch and Detroit Free Press beat writer Chris Solari. Gentlemen, we are into the throes of March, the Ides of March, however you want to say it. We got a very busy week here for coming up for you guys, and kind of started this past Sunday with the announcement that Michigan State will be playing Foster Lawyer and Davidson in the first round of the NCAA tournament on Friday night, which is always very exciting. So many headlines, so many storylines. It makes your jobs both easy and difficult at the same time, because you know you're gonna have to write about certain things, especially when it comes to Foster Lawyer. But I thought it was funny that a lot of bracketology experts, you know, maybe experts in quotes or whatnot, had Michigan State playing Davidson before the selection show was announced. So I guess good job for a lot of those people. Graham, I want to start with you. What was your reaction to the announcement of on Selection Sunday that the Spartans would draw Davidson?
Grateful that I'd already done a Foster Lawyer story. Didn't tackle it again.
Sometimes timing is wonderful.
Yeah.
For things.
Goodness gracious. I was grateful because, you know, I mean, obviously it's a story that has to be written and he's going to be asked about, but it's also a story I think people will tire of very quickly by the time people are actually able to talk to him this week. But the other thing is, I actually felt bad for Foster Lawyer. That was my initial thought, was, you know, he found a perfect place for him, a great basketball fit. He's had this unbelievable year. They're absolutely an NCAA tournament team. They're fun to watch. And now his NCAA tournament experience is going to be overwhelmed by facing his former team. And not that there isn't the potential for this great sort of, you know, I don't want to say avenging sort of thing, because he was a captain of this team. He loves those guys. But not that there isn't, you know, if he scores 20 points and if everything goes well and they win, and not that there aren't potential great storylines for him. I bet deep down he wishes they were playing somebody else. Or maybe
well,
not even.
I agree with you on that in some ways. And I think Tom Izzo probably feels that way as well. And I think that's where his tongue in cheek, you know, it's wonderful for TV comment came from out of the gate with that. I just want to go back to the part where Phil says that we're now just now getting busy. It's almost as if the Big Ten tournament didn't even exist. It's been busy. Oh, it's also spring football too, starting on Tuesday, and we had Mel Tucker on Monday. So yeah, it's been a interesting and very, very packed already week and a half that is just getting ramped up with pro day on Wednesday for football and everything else. But back to the NCAAs, you know, that's obviously one of the things that, you know, not just the Foster Lawyer angle, but you know, being around the Krzyzewski and Duke situation right now with what's going to be his last NCAA tournament is going to bring on a whole other thing that's going to render the Foster Lawyer and Michigan State story as just a little minor subplot in that Greenville with a Vaughn Secor's wellness. I don't know. There's a lot of names that are in there, but I mean, it's going to be madness down there. Really. I mean, when you talk about March Madness, there's all eyes in the country are going to be on that because of Krzyzewski and Duke, and they play Fullerton in the first game. And if Michigan State gets through, they get, just like in 2019, the Zion circus, they'll get a chance at the Krzyzewski circus. So hold your hats, because this could be a very long weekend on top of everything else.
I find it interesting that this is also basically both games are basically road games for Michigan State, with Davidson, you know, not too far away from Greenville as well.
Yeah, although Davidson is a fairly small school, sure, with a modest fan base, you know, I don't think it'll be. I mean, Michigan State, given the Charlotte, just an Atlanta region alumni, I mean, both those towns are within a couple hours. I mean, I think Michigan State will have a decent showing. Duke has fans, most of them aren't in North Carolina. I'm not saying, you know, I mean, they're not. They're just in New York. They're in other places. It's not like playing UNC or something down there either. I mean, I know people think Duke has advantages, but Duke basketball is sort of like a more pronounced version of Michigan basketball in the sense that Michigan is a bigger national brand than it is locally. It has more fans elsewhere than Chrysler Center on most given days. And that's, there are certain programs that have that dynamic. And I think Duke is certainly one of them. It is going to be, though, it is an interesting pairing. It is, you know, you talk about the storylines and the Izzo mentioning that, you know, that's good for TV. I don't think this was it was interesting. Matt Charbonneau brought up a good point, and he's done those mock bracket things, you know, where you go down and as a member of the media and sort of go through the process. And he says every time they do it, you go through it, you're not seeking out storylines, but at the end you look at like five different pairings and it's like, well, that's a juicy one. Like, in other words, it just kind of happens. Like, you can talk to I was talking to Kevin Palga with Michigan State yesterday about, you know, Miami can't face Duke in the second round. So that's a 10-7 matchup that can't happen that then creates the Michigan State-Davidson game. So there are lots of reasons right. that can happen other than the, you know, I don't know that Foster Lawyer is Michigan, a big draw Michigan, nationally to make that.
I was
going to
say Michigan State can't play Loyola in the first round to prevent a Michigan State
Drew
Valentine game because they already played in the Bahamas. So,
right.
I mean, you know, that could have been a pairing had that game in the Bahamas not happened.
Right, and you saw some people even put those pairings, bracketologists who didn't actually know or that they had met or something, because you'd see that once in a while. You'd see Loyola, Michigan State as a potential pairing.
To learn through this, and, you know, not saying that Charbonneau didn't make a good point for the first time in his life, but I only say that because I know he doesn't listen. Not, you know, that's college basketball is a small world. And when you start cutting out, you know, it, based on the restrictions that are there for the committee members, it gets even smaller. So these kind of subplots are, I think it's just purely the luck of the draw. But at the same point, you know, you'd be hard pressed to not think that, well, maybe is a little, not necessarily manipulation on seed lines or anything, but I would say more of just the fact that it looks curious, but it probably is nothing more than just the way that the S-curve is and how small the college basketball world is when you only have, what, 65 power programs, something like that, between the major conferences, maybe about 80 programs or so out of 335. That have a general chance to get in every year.
All right, well, let me ask you guys this. Coming off the Big Ten tournament with the wins over Maryland and Wisconsin and then the narrow defeat to Purdue in the Big Ten tournament semifinals, did you guys think the 7 line was a good one for them, or should they have stayed on the 8-9 line, or maybe even should they have been in stronger consideration for a 6 seed?
I thought it was fair. I thought, you know, they've had some years where they've been underseeded, this was not one of them. You know, and if you had told me that it all worked out to an 8 or 9, I would have said that's fine too. I think the win over Wisconsin, I know some people overplay the conference tournament results, but the win over Wisconsin was another good win that if they were teetering, probably put them in the 7. I'm not sure beating Purdue would have moved them up if they'd beaten Purdue again, but that would have been a really strong win. So yeah, no, I thought it was absolutely fair where they wound up.
Yeah, it might have pushed them up higher on the 7, and maybe there would have been a chance based on what we just talked about with matchups that preclude people that maybe they moved on the S curve a little bit. But I mean, that's what we talked about coming in to last week on the podcast, is just, you know, beat Wisconsin, you'll probably end up going from an 8 seed to a 7 seed, and that's pretty much what we saw.
Yep. While I was relaxing on the beaches of Costa Rica during the Big Ten tournament, I was reading
your guys' a hell of an image, by the way. Yeah.
A lot of humble brag. Phil, did you happen to get sunburn on the beach?
I mean, the answer, of course, is yes. And that image that Graham was talking about.
No.
I know. Oh, no. Your sunburn. You're hurting. Your shoulders and back hurt. You know what? Nobody cares. But Graham, the image is of a beached whale. Yes, you are correct.
Rescuing a seal, whatever it is. Yeah, absolutely. I just, you can picture any of it.
Yes, exactly. But anyway, where I was getting to, while I was there, I was reading your guys' stories from the Big Ten tournament, and I seem to believe that the consensus is that this is a team that appears to be peaking at exactly the right time and is primed for maybe a potential second-round upset of the Duke Blue Devils and ending Coach K's career, which would be very exciting. But let's just look at the Spartans right now and how they're just playing in general and as the season draws to an end here.
Well, I want to make a point first because I don't necessarily think peaking is the right word.
Okay.
Because this team has gone up and down so much. They're playing better than they had been, and you saw it for a 2-3 game stretch that they played more cohesively and more connected. That doesn't mean it's peaking, if you know what I'm saying here. I mean, it means that they had a good 3-game stretch. They're back on an upward climb. I wouldn't say they're peaking.
Fair enough.
It is probably too early to say peaking. It was their best stretch of basketball in some time. And so whatever that means, I mean, this is, I don't think a team we're going to trust ever.
Probably since the non-conference season, I mean,
to be fair to them, they got A.J. Hogard back, and he was out for those two miserable games against Ohio State and Michigan. And if you look at their trajectory, when he plays well and the way he was playing, the way he played against Purdue the first time, there was some evidence that some things were happening for him. So I don't want to act like what he did in the tournament was a one-off either. You know, like this was coming. And so, you know, there's an argument that they might be peaking. The thing is, they're going to have to show that in the Big Ten tournament, or sorry, in the NCAA tournament to actually prove that was what we just saw. And I do think there's a chance, though. I mean, Duke is not playing all that well. They've got more pros. It's more talent on that team. But if you watch the Virginia Tech game or you watch the North Carolina game, and there is also an immense amount of pressure on this particular Duke team, which is a young team, and a situation that the other thing we're going to have this month, you know, most of these teams have nobody who's played in the NCAA tournament. I mean, there's a few guys with seniors and some of the super seniors, but it wasn't just last year that was weird, or if they played last year, it was this no fans NCAA tournament, but Duke didn't play in that last year. The year before that, it's called off, you know, so you get these guys who are in this huge pressure at the end of Coach K, and they haven't played in these situations, and I don't think they're playing better than Michigan State. I wouldn't pick Michigan State to necessarily beat them saying that should be the favorite thing, but I would say it's as 50-50 as you can think about it. Now, Michigan State's got to beat Davidson, obviously, to get there, but I think the draw is about as favorable as it can be for Michigan State because I like the matchup with Davidson for them. There are ways they can lose it, but overall I like the matchup for them. I think Michigan State will determine whether they win or lose it, and it's not one of those that it could go either way if they play well. And then Duke is a two seed that probably shouldn't have been a two that is absolutely beatable the way they're playing right now and gives you – what would be the greatest bounce? Like, if you think about how people would feel about that win, ending Coach K and going off to the Sweet 16 for this team, at that point, it would be everything is icing on the cake from that point forward.
Well, you also have to, you know, I don't want to be the spoiler here, but what are the odds that Fullerton knocks them out? You know, I mean, Duke's playing pretty struggling basketball. I mean, they got beat at home by North Carolina and, you know, in Krzyzewski's last home game. You know, that Virginia Tech team outworked them pretty handily. And, you know, they struggled with Syracuse in the tournament before turning it on. I mean, in a lot of ways, there's a little bit of Michigan State in that Duke team. So I'm not discounting anything out of the realm of possibility of even to the point of seeing Davidson and Fullerton play on Sunday. That said, you know, both Michigan State and Duke should be there. If they can find the consistency and find the motor. And for Michigan State, if you're able to put forth the energy that you did in particularly the Wisconsin and Purdue games, because the Maryland game had basically a half a good basketball and a half a really bad basketball, particularly that final 226. But you think about having 7 turnovers in 2 minutes and 26 seconds nearly blowing a 20-point lead, and then having 11 turnovers in the next two games combined, that's one of those positive signs that if you're Michigan State and you do match up against Duke, that you look at and you say, if we play like this, if we play like we did against Wisconsin, if we play like we did against Purdue in those games, we can beat a team with more talent like Duke has. So it'll be, you know, again, got to get past a team that, and we talked about this early in the year. There was a point where I looked at you and I said, this team's going to have some issues with 3-point defense. And they've had moments where they've been outstanding perimeter defensively. And they've had times where they've given up 9, 10, 11 threes in a game. So to beat Davidson, you've got to have that lockdown on the perimeter, particularly not just Lawyer. Their bigs need to be able to stretch and do that. That's how you have to get – you have to be able to take that element away from Davidson to move on, if you ask me.
And also something we haven't really talked about yet is Tyson Walker's injury. And Tom Izzo said in the press conference on Monday that it was going to be a quote-unquote coin flip whether or not he plays. Now, obviously, him not being available would be a big factor, but exactly how big of a factor do you think that will be, Graham?
Big against Duke. I mean, it would help against Davidson. It would help against everybody, but big especially against Duke because what – he is not only is he a good defensive player on the ball and all that stuff, but you're going to face a team that, you know, is your best, you're even up with. And he has become their closer on shots. Look, if you ask somebody who's Michigan State's best player, you get a lot of different responses, right? I mean, it's a hard thing to say. And I don't think anybody would say Tyson Walker is their best player. Some would say A.J. Hogarth. Some might say Malik Hall. Some might say most talented players, Max Christie, you know, Gabe Brown on certain nights, whatever. But I would say almost everybody would say if you had to make a shot at the end, you've got the ball, you've got to create a shot. If you need a bucket late, that Tyson Walker's kind of become that guy. And when the offense gets stagnant or you're I do not think they beat Duke without Tyson Walker. And so that to me is, you know, that should
percentage Tyson Walker? That's just as big a question. And if you get a 60-75% Tyson Walker, who's playing on a bum ankle, you're probably not going to get him for 20 minutes a game.
So here's what you need from him to me is you need Tyson Walker to be able to play off the ball with Hogarth the way they've been using that. And play enough to be in a rhythm late in the game. But the Hogarth matchup with having him and, you know, having some of their defensive flexibility that they have, you don't have to put Tyson Walker defensively on the toughest matchup. You know, you can – I'm not saying you can rest him on defense, but you can kind of avoid maybe having him guard on the ball at least. And so if what you do is you play him, you know, 5 minutes at the point and, you know – 6-7 minutes alongside Hogarth, that might be enough. I don't know. I'm not saying you can beat Duke anyway. I think they can beat Davidson without him. I think the bigger key for them against Davidson is the back line defense. I mean, they're going to have to get out and guard shooters. That's a without question. But where Davidson kills you is if you also get picked apart on the back doors and their cuts and all that sort of stuff. And that comes down to, it sounds like, Julius Marble and Malik Hall doing their version of Antonio Smith from the Princeton game in 1998 and sitting back there and being quarterback. And those are big jobs. It's very interesting, though. This is telling. Julius Marble is truly a five. He only plays the five. The other guy who's being asked to play quarterback is not the other five. And Marcus Bingham, it is Malik Hall. So that just gives you a little sense of things. They're like, they need Marcus Bingham to be the best version of Marcus Bingham without trying to do something that he's probably not best at.
Well, I don't think it's just so much that. I think there needs to be the communication between the two. And you know, when you look at the substitution patterns right now, it's Marble and Hall together. It's Hauser and Bingham that are starting. So I think that, you know, I think Marvel used the term, they need to be the policemen back there, and traffic cops, which I think that what he said about him and Hall also goes for Hauser and Bingham in their playing patterns with the substitutions. So I don't think that's necessarily, but it's also at the same point, probably a little more important for Hall and Marble to do that, because they don't have the ability to erase at the rim like Bingham does. So probably a little bit of that too. You know, I think though that to me though, against Davidson, I think they would probably like to have Walker to match him up, you know, from a size standpoint with Lawyer. But now you know, if he's not going to play, you'll probably have, he'll probably get a steady diet of bigger guards with Hogard and more than likely Jaden Akins. I would imagine those two would be the ones who will check him. So, but they also need a little bit of length, for some of the other guys, like the South Korean Lee. You know, that'll probably be on Max Christie to use his length and speed and lateral quickness to kind of take away his game. But to me, the bigs need to be out and challenging. Cause you know, the one thing about Davidson is their bigs can shoot. They've got about three or four bigs that aren't afraid to step out and hit from three. So that is Brockovich. I mean, he hits 42% from three at 6'10", and Menginga, he's not as good of a 3-point shooter, but he hit four in a row, in the game against Richmond. So, you know, they've got about three guys that, you know, the Jones kid as well, that all are, Jones is the guard, but they've got another big that will step out and hit, as well. So I think the bigs have to be able to, you know, particularly on that high ball screen, they can't just abandon their guy and start drifting towards the post. They got to be able to climb above it and make sure that they're in those guys' grills.
And the thing about those shooters, and I watch these guys play close up against Duquesne, and Duquesne's not very good. Let me start there. But Duquesne's got decent athletes. And, you know, those bigs, when they shoot threes, it's because what they do gets them open. Lee is their best player. Like, Lawyer is their leading scorer. Lee is their best player. And he can rise up and hit, and he can shoot from anywhere, and he is tremendous. And that is a big assignment. Like, that is you don't help off him ever. You help off him, you pay. And so that is you know, he will cut on you. He will, he'll hit from anywhere. Like, that's he's got size to him. Like, he is a, you know, I'll be interested to see what his career is in professional basketball. But yeah, that to me is a challenge.
Let me ask you guys this. What do you expect to see from Foster Lawyer on Friday night? How do you expect Michigan State to try to defend him? And maybe at the end of this conversation, a prediction of how many points you think Lawyer will score on Friday night.
Well, particularly if Walker's out, I expect him to just go big, physical, kind of a lot of the things that you saw him be challenged with a year ago in Big Ten play that really kind of rendered him ineffective. You know, you put bigger guards on him, chase him around, don't let him get into any kind of shooting rhythm. So it's kind of a you know, glass half full, glass empty, half empty situation, because you know what makes what is Foster Lawyer's kryptonite, but Foster Lawyer also knows your defense in and out to find himself some free space to create some shots.
Yeah, Hogard size wise should be a good, you know, I mean, Lawyer is a different player in a different place, different swagger, all that stuff, but he's still Foster Lawyer, right? I mean, you've got some athletic advantages on him, and they'll know him well. I don't think he'll be their biggest problem. I mean, he might hit a couple threes. This team's going to hit some, but you know, to me, it's really about it. Michigan State is physically the team they were at the Big Ten tournament, and they don't lose shooters. They should win this game. And physically, it's not a bad matchup for MSU. MSU to me is much worse off facing a team that's like them. That they would have been worse off facing a high major that had some flaws but had some dudes, And Davidson does. I mean, you know, I mean, it's, yeah, but it's athletically, they're not going to cause MSU problems a lot of places.
You mentioned about trying to get a point total for Lawyer. I mean, you know, his numbers this year are pretty darn good at 16.3 a game. And, you know, Izzo joked about he's probably going to bench anybody that fouls him because he shoots about 94% at the line. But you look at the game that he played against Alabama, you know, which is, I think, just kind of scrolling through, the only Power 5 team he played this year, played 34 minutes, went 3-for-7, and had 11 points. But he also had, I believe, 8 assists in that game as well. So, you know, so there's certainly some challenges that he might face. You know, he had a couple 4-turnover games this year, which, you know, again, that was an issue against bigger guards the last couple years that he played at Michigan State. So, I mean, I think, you know, you hold him under his average, you know, to between 8 to 10 points. I think Michigan State, depending on how the other guys lock everybody up. I think Foster Lawyer is the third guy you really have to worry about with Lee and Brockovich. I think those two guys are the ones that you're going to say, we need to shut these guys down and then worry about Lawyer.
Yeah. The only reason I wanted to ask is, well, I'm sort of surprised we're all on the same page here, because if you read some things on Twitter, maybe some other articles, I think there's an impression that this is going to be some sort of like huge Foster Lawyer revenge game where he's going to go for like 25 or 30 points. And like you guys said, I don't really see that coming close to happening at all. Like I even think the point total for him is going to be pretty low. I would guess as low as like 6 to 8 points for him in this game. I think Hogard and if Walker plays and Max Christie or Akins, whoever's on, I think they'll all be locked in pretty hard on him.
Well, so, and here's what they don't run a ton of stuff for Foster Lawyer. You know, he gets his points because, you know, Lee and Luca are becoming, and everybody else is a menace. And you, all of a sudden, you've left Foster Lawyer open, you know, or he comes off a ball screen and you handle it wrong or motion. Mm-hmm. I mean, so the way it would happen is it's one thing to say they'll be locked on Foster Lawyer, but there's enough motion going on in that offense and sort of they take what you give them that. Where you're going to find yourself in trouble, and where he could have a nice game is, you know, you're scrambling to cover other guys, and you wind up leaving him open, and they'll move it quick. I mean, it is a really good offensive team. Michigan State fans, the only thing that's really bad for Tom Izzo about this game is that every MSU fan is probably going to leave the game going, why doesn't MSU run that offense? Because like you watch it and you go, wait, that's a lot more fun. Wait, the hell is Izzo running? You know, like and look, it's just different. And it's true. I mean, it's just a better offense. But Davidson is a great program for its offense, for what it's done with shoot first point guards for a long time, and its guard play, and Michigan State is where it is for its defense. They're just different programs in that sense.
Parsing your guys' comments and words for the first 30 minutes of this podcast, I assume we are all on the same page that Michigan State will beat Davidson but lose to Duke in the second round. Do you guys have any additional thoughts on those predictions? Or
I disagree.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Go ahead.
In my bracket, at least, I have Michigan State winning.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's because two reasons. One, I've seen a little bit of maybe too much of Duke lately and not enough when they're playing well during the year. So there's a big part of me that like has seen too much recent Duke where they seem to be really struggling at times and Michigan State playing a little bit better. So some of it's recency bias. But the bigger part of that is I've never thought this Duke team was going to overwhelm MSU. I think MSU's played better teams in the Big Ten than Duke, especially Purdue. And then the other part of that is that Michigan State is at this point slain the demon that is Duke. Like this is not a few years ago. That Kenny Goins shot beating them to go to the Final Four, that's happened. Last year, winning at Cameron, even though both those teams were not being all that good, that's happened. Like, and a lot of guys on this team were part of that. Part of, you know, and so I don't. To me, the aura of Duke to who they are to MSU is no longer what it once was. And I think just from a basketball perspective and where these two teams are perspective, I think it's very close to 50-50. And Duke right now, I don't think is in a great state of things. And that said, they'll win by 20 probably, right? So, yeah.
Well, and I mean, listen, those guys may have been part of the win at Cameron last year, but that's also a Duke team that didn't make the tournament. There's only two guys who were on that team that beat Zion, and that's Marcus Bingham, who didn't really play, and Gabe Brown, who played minimally. So, yeah, that to me, I still think they lose to Duke because I just think that the Krzyzewski thing is going to be quite a bit, but it's going to be hard to see how that crowd is down there as well, because they could honestly swing the other way. And, you know, there may be a lot of North Carolina fans who may want to see Krzyzewski lose to Michigan State too, who become, you know, quasi Michigan State fans. But I do think the Davidson game will be a very good one. And I think that they will get through and pull away a little bit late. I think their size and their overall depth and talent will ultimately give them, you know, about an 8 to 10 point win.
A trigger warning to a few of our listeners here: we are going to stray away from Michigan State specific talk here for a few minutes, and I want to get Graham and Chris's, and I'll deliver myself as well, our Final Four predictions and national champion pick. Chris, I want you to go first with your Final Four predictions and national champion.
Well, I do think that it's going to be an interesting tournament because everybody's been so up and down across the country all year. It's going to be hard to project in a number of ways. I've got Gonzaga, who I think has been maybe the most consistent of the teams this year. I've got Purdue, who I think just has a lot of talent and a lot of depth. I got Villanova and Kansas with Gonzaga winning it, because I just think that Gonzaga getting there last year gives them a chance to know what it's like and have a little bit of revenge. And this is, let's face it, there's something to be said about what Gonzaga has done over the years and not gotten there. And, you know, I think that from Mark Few's standpoint, this may be his best chance to do it. And I think this is the year they get it done.
All right. We'll see if the Zags finally get it done. Chris, we understand you have to go. Life calls. Thank you for joining us on the podcast this week.
You got it, guys. We'll talk some football next week, maybe, or we'll talk a lot more basketball.
A lot more basketball. Yeah, spring football. Ah, psh, yeah. Psh. Dude, I like Iowa a lot. I like some of the Big Ten draws. I think I have Iowa, Baylor, Gonzaga, and give me the other bracket would be
it's the top left, whichever one, top right, whichever one that is.
Right. You know, that one's tough because, you know, I don't know Arizona's point guard situation, how that's going to go, if they're really going to get them, you know. But give me somebody else is going to come out of there, and I really don't have a great feel for it. But I have Iowa and Gonzaga and Iowa winning the championship. Or, sorry, Gonzaga winning the championship.
I think all three of us have kind of some shared bracket stuff here. I have Gonzaga, of course, and I have UCLA coming out of that bottom bracket. So it'll be a Gonzaga-UCLA rematch in the national semifinal on that side. And then Iowa. I told myself going in, I was like, no Big Ten teams. I'm still hurt from what happened last year when I rode hard for like Illinois, Ohio State, Purdue, and then all of those teams like flamed out as quickly as humanly possible. But I, of course, did not follow that, and I'm taking Iowa to the Final Four. And a team, and in that other bracket, the team that I have been like really riding for, and I've told people that I like them as a bet, Villanova. I think they're a team that can win the national title. That's who I have winning the national title, with Villanova beating Gonzaga in the championship game. So I got a little loose and crazy with my Final Four picks there.
Yeah, no, I respect that. It's a year where, I don't know, I think there are probably 13, 14 teams that have a chance. And so, I don't know if there's a, you know, we never see it coming, a 10 or 11 seed, you know, but I think there are a number of teams that could absolutely be there, including several in the Big Ten.
Yeah, there's a few other teams I like St. Mary's a lot, but I didn't like their matchups. Like I actually like Providence a lot too, but they got a horrible draw. South Dakota State, they're one of those lower seeds. That's like, oh, they're a team that can definitely knock some teams off, and Providence is the type of team that they can beat. So, I didn't like a lot of matchups for my upset picks. So. I really did want to talk football for a couple of minutes here since we had the Tucker press conference this week and I believe players today as well. Was there anything that kind of stood out from what Mel said yesterday?
Well, he looked ready to go. He looked like a guy who's fired up for spring ball. He looked like a guy who's, and I think he enjoys it. I think he loves the chance to measure his program, the things you get to do in a spring without the stress of games, without the game prep, without the grind of a season, I just think he is sort of intrigued about pushing his program to the next level and seeing what he's got. There was some interesting stuff there. There were some, coaching move stuff. He talked about the move at defensive line, and you can tell pass rush is something he really wants to improve, and that's why he's made that change and brought in a specialist. And he'll be working with the corners directly, which I found interesting. That's a position they struggled with at times.
Yeah, that was injury related though too, as part of that, and transfer related.
Absolutely.
When Kalon Girvin could not have left at a worse time.
And the new guy Speedy, they call what's his last name's actually Speed, right? Is this guy that they talked today about being a guy with as fast as they've seen in a while, with long arms, is physical, like he could be really something right away at that position. So I think there's reasons for intrigue. I think the program's at a different place, certainly than a year ago. And you know who your quarterback is, right? You know who your top receivers are. You got some young receivers that are really promising. The tight end position, I think, could be terrific. Not just Malik Carr, they get Hunt back, who's really a solid, stable guy, and then you get the transfer from Illinois. I think that could all of a sudden be a position of strength, which could be huge for this team. The real keys, I think, is going to be offensive line development and some younger guys there, and getting that group to be solid. And defensively, I think they will take a step this year. I think it helps having a guy like Xavier Henderson back. He was interesting to talk to today. I mean, I think those guys were a little humbled by the NFL evaluation process.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I think it was Xavier Henderson who talked about, even Kenneth Walker looked like he's all everything, right? And eventually runs a 4.38 at the combine. To see what the NFL people write about him, it's like, oh, goodness gracious. I mean, they're picking you apart because that's the goal of these guys.
Right.
And I think that was for Xavier, didn't have a great back half of the season and was beat up a little bit. He sort of realized his best chance to have a shot in the NFL was probably to come back. And to have a better run of it. He looked in great.
And then even if he does have a great year next year, he's going to get dinged for being an older guy already. And they'll say he's maxed out, maybe blah, 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 stuff like that. But
NFL careers are different in the sense that you're only, a guy like him, you're hoping he has a decent run. You're not counting on a guy at 32 years old anyway. You're trying to get a guy for a contract length for 4 or 5 years who does something good for you, and like, he's a great leader. He'll interview well. There's no question that the older you get, it probably doesn't help you in certain ways. He did play as a true freshman, though, so he's not, he's not a 6-year guy. So there's that. So, yeah, no, I understand the optimism. I understand why people are as fired up about football as they have been in a long time. And even for me, like, there have been years where this day would have been almost nauseating for me just because I mean, it's nothing against MSU. It's just – I am a sick, like,
right. We are in basketball mode. That is a fact.
Yeah. No, I remember once being playing catch in the front yard in baseball season with a friend when I was like 12, and him talking about football and me being like, who cares about football? It's June. Like, this is, I've always been one of these cyclical guys. Like, you asked me my favorite sport as a kid, it was whatever we were doing at that moment. And I've always struggled to care about the other things outside of it, and I'll just that's who I am. So
right.
It's nothing MSU related. It's just strictly a, you put me in the you put me mid-March Madness and then start telling me about April football and I'm
You're like, nah.
I'm tuning you out. I may write it, but I'm not reading it.
There you go. Yeah, the only thing I wanted to add that was of note, I thought it was interesting that Scotty Hazleton, who is the defensive coordinator, will take over as the linebackers coach. And I think that's sort of important just from the aspect of there's only two linebackers in your 4-2-5 defense, and you have a lot of linebackers on your roster. So the fact that Scotty's going to have direct contact, you know, with those linebackers as his position coach, I think will say a lot about how the depth chart plays out and how they'll fit into certain schemes and situations on the field this fall. So, and another note on top of that, speaking of linebackers, Ben Van Sumeren on Monday, he decided to go back in the transfer portal. He was a kid who transferred from Michigan to Michigan State last year and is now leaving the Spartans. And his younger brother, Alex, is a member of the Michigan State football team.
Well, and it's interesting. I think he'll have to sit out now. I don't that's an interesting move. I mean, I don't know what the – I'm sure he'll apply for a waiver and all that stuff. And I get why he's doing it. Like, he's just not a guy who was a factor for them, and they only played two backers, and it didn't work out. And, you know, so if I were a kid in that realm, I'd move on as well. But yeah, no, I do think this will be an interesting spring. I think it'll be an interesting, I think there is an energy around the program that has not been there in some time.
Yep.
And it is, I think, something that should excite fans.
Yeah. I'm also not going to watch this, but I am intrigued that that Peyton Thorne and Jaden Reed are going to try to do that multicast thing or whatever that got announced for the Spartans NCAA tournament game on Friday night.
Yeah. I mean, that's something. I won't be listening live, but I might try and go back and listen to it, you know, and see, you know, and it's another way to listen and take in the game for people. I think it's fun. I think it's cool. It sounds like they'll get paid a little for it, you know, which is great. And I think they're both nice kids who understand how to communicate. They know each other really well, and so there should be good rapport there. I think it's a fun thing.
Yeah, I think there is something to be said where, you know, maybe college age kids want to hear from their fellow peers about how, you know, how games and whatnot are happening and how they're going on, and maybe those two guys, you know, and they're name guys for Michigan State, so that might be a decent draw for everybody. So
absolutely.
Anyway, any final thoughts before we sign off here for this week, Graham?
No, it should be a fun, interesting weekend. This is different than the last time MSU was sort of in this spot as a 7-8 realm. When they were there with that Miles Bridges crew in 2017, when those guys were freshmen, that team really had no shot to make a move. That team was too young. They won that first game against Miami big, but they had no shot really to beat Kansas and move on. And I think this is a little different place. It's not that they will. They could absolutely lose to Davidson. They won't be favored to beat Duke, and they could well lose that game. But I do think, you know, when we've seen the best of MSU basketball, we've seen a little more of it lately, there's a decent chance that they wind up, I wouldn't call it above 50%, but it's two wins they've got to, you know, it's a pick 'em they've got to win against Davidson, and then a game as an underdog. But I would say there's a better chance than some people realize, I think, that they could wind up in San Francisco and the Sweet 16.
All right. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and the USA Today Network. If you enjoy this podcast and the work surrounding it, please consider subscribing. You can follow our coverage at lsj.com, freep.com, and on Twitter at Graham_couch, at Chris Solari, at Phil_friend, and at LSJ Green White. Thanks for listening.